Our reading this morning is from Matthew 6, reading from verse 16 to 24, and it's on page 970 of the Church Bible. When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show others they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face, so that it will not be obvious to others that you are fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money.
If you have a Bible, please turn again to Matthew chapter 6. While you're finding that, just to say it's great to see some people back amongst us. Been away for a few weeks. It's great to see you back with us. Now, pirates and pirate stuff... this is no link with the people who just come back, by the way. But pirates aren't really nice, of course, are they? But a good old pirate film, I mean, speak for myself, I absolutely love them. Sailing around the world, you know, trying to build up treasure, you know, kind of sailing somewhere to find some spooky cave or some deserted island to bury the treasure on, you know, in the hopes it will be safe. It's really fun to watch, isn't it? And the really fun bit is watching them go to dig up that treasure to collect it, finding that some bloke called Ben has taken it, or if you prefer the Muppet version, Benjamina. You should watch it if you haven't. It's brilliant. And versions of this happen and are happening all the time, of course, aren't they? Think of the businessman, not a pirate, but the businessman doing really well, and he thinks to himself, oh, what do I do with this money I'm making? I need to put it somewhere safe. I know, I'll invest it back in the business, build the thing up, sell it for loads, take life easy. Or the lady who finds herself climbing the career ladder, and she thinks, well, what do I do now? I know what I'll do. I'll do another degree online in the evenings, I'll get the top job in the company, and I'll get a bigger salary, a huge pension, I'll retire early and enjoy. And Jesus told a version of this as well, didn't he? He told it about a farmer whose land yielded an abundant harvest. And he said to himself, well, what do I do? My land is doing so well. I've got so much stuff. Where do I put my treasure? Where do I put my crops? I know. I will smash down my barns. I'll build bigger barns. And then I'll have plenty of stuff laid up, hoarded up for many years. Then I can eat, drink, and be merry. What is Jesus' verdict on the pirates, on the businessman, the career ladder climbing lady, and on the farmer? God said to the farmer, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you, and then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? Well, this is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich towards God. So we are in a section of Matthew's Gospel called the Sermon on the Mount. It's perhaps not the best title because it can make it sound a bit like another sermon, But actually what we've got here, chapters 5 to 7, is the king coming and laying before us the constitution of the kingdom. He's telling us and told us already about the character and the influence of kingdom people. Righteousness is key. An internal heart righteousness, not external actions. And kingdom people who are careful not to perform before others to be seen. Because the aim is that the Father is glorified. And that's what this is about. And because they are careful of things that get in the way and their relationship with God. And because of that, Jesus today talks about treasure. He talks about money, materialism. And some may be thinking now, oh, I think I forgot to put the oven on. Perhaps I better go home right now and check. Why do we have to talk about money? Just bought a new car, just had my hair done, some highlights. Got a lot of new things going on. This is just going to be a bad news sermon for me this morning. Well, that's possibly the case. But for the Christian, listen carefully. Jesus is not looking to make you feel bad or punish us for having money. He came to proclaim freedom for prisoners, sight for the blind. He always, always brings good news. And today it's freedom from the power money can have over us. So whether we have a lot of money or whether we don't have much money, we all need to hear and understand what Jesus says about our money and following him, how they fit together. And Jesus teaches using three contrasting pairs. So Michael read a bit of the context before the passage, but 19 to 24, chapter 6 is what we're looking at. The three contrasting pairs talks about two treasures, two visions or two outlooks, two ways of seeing things, and two masters. These are John Stott's titles, by the way. I've stolen them. And for each of these pairs, Jesus sets the true against the false for our understanding and growth. And firstly, when it comes to treasure, Jesus' emphasis is, if you like, a bit like the estate agents. What do they say are the three most important things when it comes to looking for a house? Location, location, location. Yeah, thank you very much. Jesus doesn't say there's no treasure. There's no such thing as treasure, does he? But he says location of the treasure is key. Treasure on earth, or earthly treasure, is not the way to go. In the day, they would lock away, they would guard, they would bury precious metals, coins, fabrics, grains, animals, kind of different ways of looking after the things they had. Of course, it's the same today. It's like different banks for our money, house, wardrobe for our clothes, garage for the car, not a camel, and so on. But Jesus is not saying, don't save money at all. He's not saying don't save. Elsewhere in the book of Proverbs, God addresses the sluggard. And he says, lazy bones, look at the ant. Yeah, go to the ant. They're collecting during the summer, full of winter. Be wise. Jesus does get to the problem in a moment of how money can control us, blind us, and steal and captivate our hearts. But first, in this verse 19 is and 20, logical point being made. Don't store up money and stuff here, viewing it as a kind of unshakable security. You know, don't do that. Don't do that, because earth is not a good location for treasure. You'll never have complete peace of mind. It's liable to either be eaten, corroded, or stolen. And for some of us, little moths are bad enough with their little flappy wings. Others love moths, don't they? But they leave behind that dusting as well when you try to get rid of them, don't they? That funny dusting they leave behind your skin. I found out that's actually scales that they're shedding. But moths, yeah, it's actually worse than moths. And some of you may have had moth problems in your homes. But it's worse than the little flappy moths. It's not moths that eat our stuff, is it? No, it's worse. They lay eggs on our stuff, and it's their little larvae that eat our clothes and carpets and things like that. And vermin or rust can be translated as eating, stuff that eats. So it's not just water or metal, But any corrosion, I mean, mice eating the grain store, for example, mold, woodworm eating that wonderful bit of furniture that's been handed down through the family for many years. Thieves in the day would dig their way under and through, you know, brick mud walls. And Jesus is just making a point. Look, I mean, just think about it. There is no real security here. It's not shame on you because you've got stuff, but it's just be realistic. What sort of security do you actually have? I mean, you really think your stuff is absolutely safe. But then we say, oh, today we've got banks, we've got building societies, we've got bonds and shares and pensions and properties you put money into and so on. And we have slumps, and we have crashes, and we have Brexit, and we have wars, we have natural disasters, we have lawsuits, taxes, we have online theft, and on and on. And so we do the pirate thing, don't we? We try and find, people in the world are trying to find the safest spot for our booty to go and be hidden. So we install burglar alarms, CCTV gets set up, we take out insurance plans, there's companies spending time and money constantly looking for ways to make sure nothing bad can happen to our stuff. But Jesus is right, isn't he? Of course he is. Earth is not a good location. And even if our stuff doesn't grow wings and fly away, even if we die with like millions stuffed into our mattress, well, we have to leave it behind. We don't have pockets in our shrouds, do we? So he's saying, come on, stuff here doesn't last. So store treasure in heaven. The second type, heavenly treasure. Because there it lasts. There's no moths, not going to be corroded, no thieves in heaven. But then we think, okay, I get the treasure on earth problem, but what is treasure in heaven? What's Jesus talking about? Well, it's everything that being with the King in his eternal kingdom brings. It is God himself, of course, isn't it? It is living with Christ in a place of eternal peace, joy, and light. Also, Jesus has talked already about heavenly rewards for godly character, rewards for doing things in secret, praying, fasting, giving. He also talks in Mark 9 of heavenly rewards for those who just give a cup of water to those in need in his name. Another time, to a rich young man who came to him, he says, you want an investment opportunity. You want to be really rich. This is what you need to do. Sell all you have, give it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Heavenly treasure is whatever kingdom people can take with them into heaven. It's whatever we do that counts for heaven. Not building with straw, but building with bricks. Spiritual life, its fruit, its holiness. It's other people as well, isn't it? Those won to Christ. Perhaps because of our prayers. Perhaps because of our input in hospitality. In giving to gospel work, our support, our encouragement for them. Storing up in heaven seems to be the opposite of how we tend to store up on earth. So instead of trying to be rich here and accumulate here, instead Jesus says, give, like be generous, have loose, open hands to the poor towards kingdom work. Let money just flow through you, as it were. Be a vessel of God's glory. That is storing up treasure in heaven. But Jesus moves us on. The gist, it seems, being that because of this truth, we should set our focus on what matters. So there's two possible locations for our treasure. There's heaven or earth. And there's two visions or two ways of seeing treasure. One with a healthy sight, which is light, and the other, unhealthy sight leading to darkness. Look at verse 22. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? See, if we set our sights on earthly treasure, we have a double problem. The first problem, we're investing badly. It's common sense. Doesn't make sense. They don't last on earth. The second problem, we're putting ourselves also, we invest in earthly treasure, in great danger. Because they don't enlighten us. Far from it, earthly treasure leads us into darkness. If our eyes are filled with unhealthy stuff of this earth, then our attitudes and our hearts will be shaped by those things. Verse 21, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be. Or where you look to, what you look towards, well, that affects what you love. That's where your heart will go. If we're often found immersed in Hello Magazine or Country Living, well, we'll be obsessed with celebrity and clothes and nice homes. If we're always stuck in the Argos catalogue, or if we're always online shopping, then we shouldn't be surprised that we are dissatisfied with what we have, because our hearts, verse 21, are set by what we look to. So what do we look to, mostly? Do we look to things that make us content in Christ, more focused on the kingdom, on heaven? Or do we look at things that actually block our view, darken our view of Jesus? Do we look to the things of this earth? The rich Suffolk landowner was showing his friend around his house, and as he stepped onto the vast garden terrace, he waved his hand to the west. It's taken a few years, so I would do a Suffolk accent or attempt to, and a good deal of sweat, but everything in that direction, as far as you can see, is mine. And his friend looks at the rolling fields full of livestock. And everything in that direction is mine as well, he says, pointing to a vast forest and a river. And that way, he says, pointing to fields of crops, that's all mine as well. And he paused, waiting for a compliment from his friend. Instead, his friend put his hand on his shoulder and, pointing up, said, what about that way? Have you invested in that direction? So the problem of looking to earthly treasure is the seducing power it has over us, and causing us not to plan ahead, but to live in the moment. It's often only on the threshold of death that people realize what fools they have been. Queen Victoria, I believe, is reported to have said near the end, all of my belongings for a moment of time. The king calls his kingdom people, like the children's thought, to shine. So people glorify the Father, and we can. If our eye is fixed on Christ, if our heart is fixed on treasure in heaven, our whole body will be full of light. That's wonderful, isn't it? Our hearts will be his. And we want hearts that are his, don't we? But our eyes are lamps, Jesus says. So what we look to, what we set our attention on, matters. Children go through a phase where they're fascinated with money. And the piggy banks arrive, don't they, very early on usually, with all good intentions and important learning opportunities, of course. But there comes a time when questions from the children come thick and fast. How much might I get for my next birthday? And Christmas? How much I get for Christmas? And those two combined? Oh, and £10 from Auntie Maud, don't forget that. Mum, when do we next see Granny? You can see the brain ticking over. Kids get this phase where they get obsessed with money, but some never leave that phase, do they? When's the next paycheck? When might be the bonus? And again, nothing wrong with money, land, clothes, or cars. But here's the problem. If that's all we love, if that's what we look to, then where's our heart going to be? What we look at becomes what we treasure. What we treasure becomes what we serve. And that shapes what we love and hate, doesn't it? So Jesus says, get the location right. Get your eyes looking the right way. Because, verse 24, treasure on earth will try to master you. So two masters, God and money. Jesus shows us two thrones, God on a throne, and on a rival throne is money. He said, you can't serve both. You would think, well, why not? You know, why can't I have both? I'll be Christian and loads of stuff as well and all the rest of it. Well, some attempt the impossible, don't they? Half for God, half for my stuff. I'll do the Christian thing and love money. But that's being married to money and dating Jesus, if you like. And it can't work because money demands our whole heart. And so does Jesus. Because earthly treasures point us this way. And Jesus points us that way. And we can't go both ways. We just can't do it. So after a short time, as Jesus says, we'll grow tired of Jesus and his demands. He'll become annoying to us. Because he doesn't want us to be mastered and to follow the promises that money gives. See, both say, live for me, don't they? Both say, sacrifice to me, serve me, put your family behind me as your insurance and security. Trust me, believe me, obey me, worship me. They both say that, God and money. But they're not the same kind of master, are they? Forgive me if you haven't seen The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. But watching Edmund being seduced by the White Witch is so frustrating. You can't get in the TV. It's like, Edmund, what are you doing? She's lying, Edmund. Can't you see? Don't be so foolish. Can't you tell she's a witch? Can you hear the creepy music playing? I mean, she's weird looking as well. Have we seen people mastered by money? Are we someone mastered by money and belongings and possessions? Can't we see that money is not to be trusted? Yeah, very useful. Absolutely. We'll come to that in a minute. But we can be so foolish to believe its promises and to not see where it takes us, where it leads. It leads to slavery. And we need to be so very careful in our culture, don't we? Because our stuff, and we have stuff in our culture, we really do, it wants to master us. It wants to own us. It wants to so grip our hearts and not let go because it will not share power. And greed escalates because in a natural sense, it has more pulling power over us than Christ. So a kind of three-way relationship, if that is attempted, will end with us hating Jesus. Because if our priority is stuff, he will be an unwelcome distraction, a voice we just resent. It wants to master us. And Paul makes clear it's the love of money which is the root of many types of evil. So if there's a root going down into a person's heart, a heart mastered by money, well, what fruit will come from that person? Think of a young man who gets married, and at first he has this healthy ambition, gets a good job and he works hard. But then as the paychecks come in, along with stuff, work turns to overwork. Overwork becomes neglect, mistreatment of his wife, impatience with his children, absence, even when he's at home. He's there, but he's not really there because he's got this thing in his hand all the time because he's so busy. His walk with the Lord suffers. He gets himself in very compromised situations, on and on and on. All because there is a root in his heart that loves money. He's mastered by it. And a nasty root brings nasty fruit, doesn't it? Money is so dangerous because it promises so much, and for a time it delivers. It does. But like the ring, the precious, it very quickly demands and enslaves, owns, blinds, and binds people. And the more we have, the more we tend to want. And the less we're satisfied with what we have, and the more we worry. And of course, the more we have to lose. Are we mastered by money and stuff? I mean, we can find out quite easily. Just ask ourselves, you know, what do we dream about? Like really, honestly, what is our big dreams? When we find ourselves daydreaming about? What is it we would say we cannot live without? Or what really excites us? What energizes us? What is it that gets us going? Or what is it that agitates us? What dominates our thoughts? Our bank statements show our hearts, don't they? Because where our money goes shows what we love. I mean, we've got to pay for clothes and food and bills and more bills. But what does the rest go on, if there's any left? What does it go on? It seems a bit of a vicious cycle in the passage, doesn't it? What we look to, we treasure. And we treasure what we look to and get mastered by it and so on. They feed each other. But look back at verse 21, and we'll close with this. Whilst verse 21 explains the problem, it actually also points to the cure. Because if what we look to affects what we love, if our treasure affects our heart, then, well, hang on. Can I get my heart on the right track by looking at the right things? Can I in some way retrain my desires to love what I ought to love? Is that possible? Maybe you've heard someone say, or maybe you said it yourself, the words, I wish I had a heart for mission. Well, how do we get a heart for mission? Give money to mission. Because we get interested in where we invest, don't we? So if we give to Grace Baptist Mission, our desires will be for mission work. We'll watch prayer waves with a renewed focus, won't we? Because we're investing. We're interested in where we invest. Or perhaps we'd say, I wish I had more of a heart for gospel work. I know the kingdom's important. I just wish I thought it more so. Well, how do we get a heart for gospel work? Well, we give time and prayer and money to gospel work. Because where our treasure is, there our heart will be. That's a statement, also a possibility for us. By giving more to gospel work, by investing in gospel work, we'll get our hearts more interested in gospel work. So this Tuesday is the prayer meeting. Christianity Explored is happening as well, and it's a four church prayer meeting in here. And we might think, oh, I'm not in the Christianity Explored bit, and as a four church, it's not just us, just us together. I quite like it when it's just us. Is Jesus just interested in just us? Is he interested in the other four churches, three churches? Interested in the whole of Ipswich, the whole of the world? Of course he is. The secret to being set free from the power of money is to give it away, isn't it? And if we don't believe it, why don't we try it? You could even say that money can make the Christian happier. Because the more they earn, the happier it can make them, so long as they give it away. If we store, as Jesus says, it corrodes our hearts. But give, use, and we will be personally invested in the greatest project, the kingdom of God. We will have a personal stake in winning the lost and God's glory. It's not wrong to make money. The problem is our view of it and our keeping of it. If you're able to make lots of money, great, do so. Do so with great care, though. Do so with someone you trust, Christians who would be accountable to as well, probably. And then live simply and live generously. Give to kingdom work because it's the Father's glory which counts. So Jesus asks us, where's the location of our treasure? Honestly, where is it? Where are we building, storing? Where do we direct our eyes and who do we serve? And he doesn't want to beat us down. He says, come to me. I'll give you rest. He's out for our good, isn't he? He's not trying to make us miserable, but he knows money will enslave us. It does that. So he says, I've come not to be served. I've come to serve you. He's not trying to ruin our lives and fun here, but he knows money will leave us empty. So he says, drink of this water. As Dan read earlier, come to me without money, without cost. Jim Elliot invested his life in kingdom work. A wonderful missionary. His life was taken early by our Lord at the hands of the Orca Indians in South America. And he said famously, this is in his diary they found after he was speared to death for the Lord's work. He said, he is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain that which he cannot lose. Amen. May we know the truth of that.